Welcome to the Building Stories podcast series. My name is Amy Barnes, and I'll be your host as we explore some of Ontario's built heritage. This series will include 15 podcasts in total, so if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to check out some of the others. Each podcast is going to explore a different topic related to heritage conservation in different regions of Ontario. The podcast will include a brief history of the building, interviews with people who have some connection to this space, but the ultimate goal is to try and tell stories about the buildings, stories about the space that most people don't know. So without further ado, let's get started on today's topic. The town of Meaford, Ontario has a lot to offer. It is home to an active waterfront and harbor and is surrounded by a beautiful natural landscape as far as the eye can see. It also has a plethora of heritage buildings within the town. I visited Meaford on a beautiful summer day and walked the main street of the historic downtown. And right in the center, I found Meaford Hall, which is the topic of our podcast today. When the original town hall in Meaford was lost in a fire, Toronto architects Ellis and Connery built the hall you see today in 1909. Senior partner James Ellis was a native of Meaford, and although he had gone on to make a name for himself designing churches, banks, and schools in Toronto, he returned to his hometown to leave this architectural gem for his community. Meaford Hall is a 2.5-story neoclassical red brick building. It has many interesting and decorative features, such as gables in the Palladian style, the Roman Doric porches, and a variety of interesting masonry details. Now, like many buildings of this grandeur for a small town, it was always meant to be more than just a town hall. It was meant to be the hub of the town and served the community in various ways. Throughout its life, it served as a marketplace, council chambers, town offices, a courtroom, library, a ballroom, meeting areas, Boy Scout hall, police department, and a jailhouse. But as time went on, the building slowly lost these vital community uses that are necessary to keep a space relevant. In 1967, the library moved to a bigger space, the police department left in 1996, and the town vacated the office space in 2002. Buildings that are left empty become at risk of neglect or even worse, demolition by neglect. When Meaford was to be amalgamated with two local townships, there was talk that the building would soon be declared redundant, and some even whispered of a parking lot taking its place. Now, I can't for the life of me figure out why it always seems to be a parking lot that are proposed to replace such a grand building, but that would be a whole other podcast. Luckily for the Meaford Hall, there were many concerned citizens who sprang into action and formed the Meaford Group. With the helpful advice from the ACO branch of Walkerton, who I did a podcast on as well about their successful restoration and rejuvenation of their local hall, the Meaford Group formed the Meaford branch of the ACO and plans were set in motion. The group raised $15,000 to get a feasibility study done, and with that study came ideas, a projected cost, and the ever-important business plan that could be used to support a new layer of life to the building. I spoke with John Kerr from the Heritage Meaford chapter of the ACO, who not only knows a lot about the history of the hall, but also chaired the restoration committee for its final year in 2005. He took me on a tour of the building and pointed out some of the interesting changes and many challenges they encountered throughout the restoration process. We started our tour on the second floor, in the most dynamic part of the hall, and probably what it is best known for. So we're currently standing in the Opera House of the building.
That's right. And this is an unusual opera house only in that it is such a complete theater. It was designed, as many of these places were, as an opera house and a place of entertainment, but it was also very much the public meeting place where election campaigns were fought out and that sort of thing happened. Originally, this stage was much smaller than it is now, and the seating in the theater was correspondingly larger. I would say sometime in around the 20s, the old orchestra pit was removed and the stage was extended. When we renovated it, we tried to maintain as much of the original as we could. We did have to extend the stage forward, and we lost the entire left wing to the current entrance and the elevator behind, but we compensated for that by adding a backstage space that did not previously exist. There was here, in the original theater, a mezzanine level squeezed between the top of the stage and the ceiling of the first floor. And in that mezzanine level, there were actually changing rooms, which is really unusual for a small town stage like this. It's still there. We've enhanced it, enlarged it with the extension to the back of the building. The actual green room and the dressing rooms are really pretty spiffy.
There are also many original features in the Opera House worth mentioning. The proscenium arch, the wooden row of seats, the embellished balcony with raised plasterwork, the high ceiling and tall shape to the windows. There is also the wooden staircase just outside the Opera Hall, which was examined during the restoration process and found to be held together only by plaster and, as John says, the will of God. But after a little structural love, the staircase remains. Some parts of the Opera House are new, of course, the obvious ones being the projection booth and the sound system. But the windows also had to be replaced, though their shape remains the same. They had to do this because they found that the ivy had not only grown up the side of the building, but had also grown through the putty and in between the layers of glass. Now that would have been a sight to see. I also had the chance to speak with Susan Lake, who is the manager for cultural services for the town of Meaford. Susan has been in that role since 2007 when the building reopened as a multi-purpose facility. Susan was able to tell me more information about the Opera House.
So what we have here in this in the Opera House is total seating now for 300 people. So just a little, not quite half what was originally there. And 60 seats in the balcony, of which we sell, and 240 on the main floor. We have more than 60 live performances a year. Plus, we have different film series. We have more than 30 films a year, dance recitals, and then there are an assortment of community and corporate events that occur on the stage, from fundraisers to council meetings and other things, weddings. We have had weddings, memorials. It's really finding its way as a popular place for people to use in Meaford. We've had many world-class performers here, everything from country artists like Whisperin' Bill Anderson to John McDermott, Ashley McIsaac, Natalie McMaster. We've had live professional theater on stage, collaborated with other professional theater companies to bring it here. We have a very strong music performance schedule, and that is what most of our performances are now.
I asked Susan if the Opera House was the main hub of the building, and here's what she had to say.
Well, that's a great question. We're probably best known for the Opera House, and that's what people associate Meaford Hall with, but our greater use is actually as a meeting space for community users, and whether that be quilters, artists, you know, the local bankers and volunteer organizations that meet here on a daily basis.
If you walk into the main entrance of the hall today, which is the basement, you will see the always busy meeting space is in the large room directly past the information and ticket booth. Now, many people are confused by the entrance because it is now at the back of the building. But this was a necessary move to ensure that it is accessible to all, and those that need direct access to the elevator have it. During its earlier layers of life, the entrance would have been at what is now the back of the building. One would have walked through the great pillars and under the pediment that has Meaford Hall etched into the stonework and entered onto the first floor. I asked John to explain what it might have looked like originally when you entered in this way.
So this space, this way, was the council chamber and courtroom. Behind this wall, there was there was a holding cell for the prisoner and the judge's chamber, and originally at one time the town library. Later times, that town library became the police office, the office for the police station. The jail cells are in the basement.
Are they still here?
Yep.
So I'm sure at some point it was a very rowdy place to be.
I imagine so.
And are these local artists on the wall?
Yes. So now the this particular space, the North and South Gallery, is used for a a rotation of exhibits by artists. Primarily we have community artists, I would say regionally between Gray County, where we are presently, Simcoe, and Bruce County. So we draw from all of that area, and it's a gallery that has art for sale as opposed to just simply for exhibit purposes. So there is a little revenue generated from that. This space also serves as our intermission space for our Opera House events. So the bar is here. So it was once rowdy with the council goings on and court. Now perhaps a little rowdy with our theater goers and at intermission.
Since John was part of the process from start to finish, I asked him what kind of documentations they had to work with during the renovations. He said that they had the original drawings, but they were more for fun than anything else. It was the new required needs of the space that really guided their motives. I asked John if the building was in good shape when this process started.
No, the building was not in good shape. And when you restore an old building like this, you don't know what you're going to find. And you really can't budget for it. You just have to cross your fingers and go ahead. The very first thing they discovered was that the whole southeast corner of the building was sunk because there was an underground stream that had undermined everything. And the foundations were not sitting on a big concrete footing. They were sitting on logs. So we had to tear out the whole corner of the building, shore it all up. And of course, in the middle of all of that, we found a great big mammoth boulder, which was difficult and expensive to move.
We ended our tour that day in the basement and headed to John's favorite room in the whole hall, and by far the least glamorous. It is the maintenance room, but it holds a very special, well actually three special, pieces of the past. And I apologize for the noise on the recording, but it's hard to avoid when you're standing right next to a machine.
So this is the original jail cell.
These are the jail cells. It's kind of fun. This cell.
Oh, there's three of them.
Yeah, this cell was the women's cell. And for some reason, it had concrete floors and the other two, this was mud. There were very few visitors to the women's cell, apparently. People actually escaped from these cells.
No way.
Yeah. There was some clever devil who, having nothing to do all night by himself in the jail cell, broke up through the ceiling and crawled along up through the ceiling until he actually got out somewhere.
Now this spot is not open to the public, but trust me when I say, it's hard to believe that anyone could escape from there, considering that the room seemed completely enclosed. But when you have lots of time on your hands, people come up with some creative ideas. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. If anyone wants more information about renting the hall for an event, or you want to catch a performance in the amazing Opera Hall, you can find all the information and more on the Meaford Hall website. I would like to thank John and Susan for taking me on the tour, and I wish you continued success with the hall. If you want to learn more about the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario and its involvement with the preservation and conservation of buildings all over Ontario, the ACO is celebrating its 80th anniversary by putting together a book. This book will feature 80 buildings the organization has had a hand in saving over the last 80 years. Now, the Building Stories episode you heard today is just one that will be included, but there are many more stories to discover. You can get the book starting in November 2013 by ordering it online at their website. The Building Stories podcast series could not have been made possible without our sponsors, so a big thank you to the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario, the Heritage Resource Centre at the University of Waterloo, the Centre for Community Mapping, the Computer Systems Group at the University of Waterloo, and the Government of Ontario. If you have any comments, we would love to hear from you. You can email the Building Stories team at info@buildingstories.co or send them a tweet at Building Stories, which is BLDG_stories. And of course, you can find them on Facebook under the Building Stories Facebook page. These podcasts have been written, produced, and hosted by myself, Amy Barnes, and I'd like to take this last moment to thank you all for listening.